Hi, this is Shino Tanaka.
And this is Saul Jaeger, and welcome to another special edition of the Mountain View Police Department Silicon Valley Beat.
That's right, and on the Silicon Valley Beat today, who do we have?
We have Public Safety Dispatcher 3, Carla Nightstep.
That's right, she is Senior Dispatcher.
Right, this is the person that you'd be talking to when you call in a 911 call. This is one of our incredibly talented dispatchers.
And Carla has been a dispatcher for 13 years. She began her career at San Jose State University, which is where she also graduated.
Right. And she's now with us, thankfully. She's been here for 3 years with Mountain View and made a big impact so far. So hopefully we get some questions you may have about dispatchers and communications and what they do every day answered. You'll even learn how to do a sit-along if you want.
That's right. I didn't even know we could do those. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Well, dispatchers are often overlooked. They are a very important commodity to any police department or any agency, and hopefully we will be able to demonstrate to you why.
Yeah, let's see what she has to say.
Let's do it.
7111985, 700 block of San Antonio. Deanna Gold, Malibu.
7111102,
Sergeant Jaeger.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
We have another special guest today.
We do have another special edition of the Silicon Valley Beat.
That's right, the Mountain View Police Department Silicon Valley Beat.
At least I'm consistently forgetting that. With Public Safety Dispatcher 3, Carla Nightstep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And which is basically a lead dispatcher.
Meaning she's a supervisor, so she oversees the other dispatchers, or some of the other dispatchers.
Yeah.
And we're very fortunate to have her today, and the reason being is the dispatch center, or the communication center, is extremely busy. Even when they're not receiving phone calls, they're updating a variety of things, which we'll talk about today.
Yeah, it's a neat job, something that people don't get to see a lot. Even when they come on a ride-along, or they're at the police department for some reason, they don't generally get to see the group that's down there, which is like the heartbeat of the police department, really.
They are. They are at the core of everything that we do, and they bridge the gap between what's happening on the, I guess, for about lack of a better term, the citizen side, and also what's going on with the police officers or whatever the situation is. So they have to bridge those sort of two worlds, which are very different. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about today how it's different, why it's different, and I think really to dispel some misunderstandings, hopefully, about dispatch and why they do what they do and how they do.
Mm-hmm. So now that we talked for a minute and a half, Carla, hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time out to come talk to us.
No problem.
Listen to us talk
about each other. Yeah. Let's talk about Carla some more. Anyway.
So Carla's really cool. Nice. Actually, when I was I think it was my first trinary or second trinary as a sergeant. Might have been the second one.
I don't know which trinary it was.
You and I worked together.
Yes.
That was fun. A lot of good times.
I didn't work with her on a trinary. But I do have a mutual friend, and we talk about small world. She knows someone that I worked with when I was at Menlo Park.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy time. All right, well, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you start in the dispatching world?
I was at San Jose State. I was a student, and I needed a job, and I started working at the police department at San Jose State. Just as a student assistant, I would provide escorts to the students off campus and unlock doors for professors, things like that. And then I started working in their investigations bureau as a court liaison, and at night I would help their full-time dispatchers do backup work for the student assistants. And basically needed a full-time job, and when you're a staff member at San Jose State, you get what's called a fee waiver, so you pay a very small amount to only take two classes, and kind of decided to do that. Became a full-time dispatcher, paid my way through the rest of my college, and got my degree.
Brilliant. That's amazing. Daughter should listen to that.
A lot of kids should listen to that. It isn't easy to do, but the results are fantastic. Now, tell us what you majored in at San Jose State.
I majored in sociology, and started as a music major and then decided that wasn't for me, and I took a sociology class as one of my GEs and loved it and decided to finish up with a bachelor's in that.
Which is interesting because when you think about sociology, you're talking about people.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you find about your major, or did it at all help you in your role as a dispatcher?
I was lucky that the program at San Jose State, it was sociology with an emphasis in criminology. So when I got up to my upper level classes, I got to focus a lot on the criminology. It's it's been a while. I can't remember the specific classes I actually took, but a lot of them were more law enforcement. I didn't focus on, back then it was administration of justice. Now they've changed it to something else, and I think it's criminal studies or something.
It's a great program, San Jose State.
Yeah.
But so I got to do more of the people studies as opposed to just focus on, well, back then it was AJ. So I did more research and things of that sort. So I really enjoyed it.
Tell us how long you've been with Mountain View PD.
I've been with Mountain View PD for 3 years now.
3 years. Okay. So where were you before that?
Before Mountain View, I was with Los Gatos Monte Sereno Police Department. And then I started at San Jose State. I've been a dispatcher. I'll be 13 years in July.
All right. So you've seen, heard, and otherwise experienced just a lot of really interesting stuff. So sorry, I just wanted to ask that question.
But Mountain View has been your best... the best place ever, right, so far?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No offense.
Just checking.
Other agencies.
No, you take offense. It's fine. No, you're right. You're right. Mountain View.
It's been, I've learned a lot from every agency I've been with. I've experienced a lot of people would think, oh, San Jose State's not a real police department. It surely is. I mean, it's, you can think of San Jose State, basically its own little city.
Mm-hmm.
And they do real police work.
Make arrests.
Mm-hmm.
Investigations.
Busy. They're definitely busy. Same thing with Los Gatos. Oh, it's just, you know, kind of an upper class community. I've worked I got to be a solo dispatcher, worked by myself for several homicides. So
we'll talk about that a little bit later because you've got some fascinating calls.
Come to Mountain View and, you know, I get to experience the same thing. I'm able to work with several other dispatchers at the same time, which has been wonderful. So definitely have had my share of experience with all three agencies.
All right. Now we can go back to your question, Sergeant Jaker.
What was my question?
I don't remember your question either.
So we're talking about dispatchers and training and the academy.
So
tell us about the Dispatcher Academy. How long is it?
Beginning dispatcher. It's very similar to an officer. You apply. You have the same process as far as you have a oral board panel. You meet with the chief for a chief's interview. We have to do a background check. We have to do meet with a psychologist to go through that. So that whole process is very similar. Difference with us is we can get hired and start our training program, and within that first year, we have to do our academy.
Oh, I see. So you don't have to go to the academy first,
correct,
to become a dispatcher. You can get on-the-job training, for lack
exactly
of a better term. Okay.
So what is the academy like?
Our academy is 3 weeks long, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. So it's definitely shorter than the officer's academy. You learn basic call taking. You'll learn elements of a crime. So they kind of, just the basics. Not as intense as the officer academy. Mm-hmm. So, and there's people from all over the area, so they won't go into the specifics as far as the different codes for this area.
It's in this county, I believe it's the entire county, we use 10 codes.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
The in-house training is very similar to officers. You're assigned to a training officer, or we call them mm-hmm. CTOs, communication training officers, officers or field training officers. You're assigned to several different ones. You rotate through phases, just like officers do.
And how long does that last?
For someone brand new, it could be probably about 4 months.
Wow.
So just like an officer, you get daily observation reports. You move through different phases. You'll usually start with call taking, depending on how long that takes. Then you move on to the radio side. So if we have the opportunity, we can do an in-house academy for the first 2 weeks mm-hmm. and make sure they're out of the communication center and just doing book work, going through different types of the systems that we use. Sometimes that's not always possible, so usually we do that work inside the dispatch center. At the same time, we're learning everything else.
So as someone who is not familiar with the way dispatch works, tell us a little bit about what your duties are, not so much as a supervisor, but just as a communications person when you're down there in the hub, in the dark, in your cave. It's actually pretty cool. I really like it.
Mission control.
Yeah, it is. It is really, truly mission control.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the various things that you have to do.
Every dispatch center is different. So specifically here at Mountain View, we dispatch for police, the fire department, as well as the Mid-Peninsula Open Space Rangers. We also dispatch the Parks and Public Works Department, or, you know, the duty men, the watermen. We answer for them after hours. We answer all 911 calls. We have 4 emergency lines, and we also have the non-emergency lines.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. So we have minimum staffing is 3 dispatchers. We go down to 2 dispatchers between 2 a.m. and 8 a.m. So normally how it works is we have 1 person assigned to take phones and answer the rangers. And so whoever that person is will answer the phone. And then if the second call comes in, if they can put the call on hold, they'll answer the second line. If they're not able, let's say they're taking a 911 call, it's a medical, they're giving CPR instructions. And the second person, who's also working the fire channel, will pick up the second line as well. So that second dispatcher, they're in charge of the fire channel, and they're also the backup phone person. The third person for minimum staffing is working solely on the police radio. And they have the capability of answering the phones. Typically, they don't, because the police radio is so busy that it's a little hard to juggle answering the phones and handling all the police radio traffic.
So that was just the phones. That doesn't include all the other operations that you guys are trying to complete while taking those calls, while dispatching police and fire and Mid-Peninsula, so on and so forth. And what I mean by that is you're entering in license plates, you're running records checks on names, criminal history, making phone calls to, you know, probation departments.
Correct.
How do you... I mean, it takes a very unique person or individual to be able to multitask at that level. How have you managed? I mean, what was that experience like for you?
It's definitely, being a dispatcher is definitely unique. Yeah,
you're juggling.
You have to be able to multitask a certain way. It's hard to describe. It's something you have to. When people come in and we do sit-alongs, as we call them, not ride-alongs, mm-hmm. to see that firsthand, it's definitely a juggling act. You have officers, requesting to do, you know, run a license plate to check someone if they have warrants. Can you call this person? Can you call that person? You know, the fire department's asking the same thing. Can you call the ambulance and see if they can bring up this equipment? And then the rangers are asking for the same thing that the officers are asking: run out this license plate, run out this person to see if they have warrants. And all at the same time, you have citizens calling in because they may have an emergency. You may be giving CPR instructions for someone who, you know, needs them, or an alarm company calling in an alarm. So you just don't know. Other agencies mm-hmm. calling in because they need our assistance, or just giving us information because they just had a crime occur and they need our officers to look for the suspects.
Oh, that just made my blood pressure go up. Oh my gosh.
It blew me away the first time I went down there, because you don't, even as a police officer, you don't really realize what you guys are doing. You know, we only hear what we ask for, or what you guys are dispatching mm-hmm. when it comes out. And so when you take the time to go down there and sit down and listen, you think somebody's maxed out or stretched thin as far as their attention span. I remember being down there, and there was a full structure fire going on, and I don't remember who I was talking to, but there were several of you down there, and I was talking, and at the same time, it sounded like I didn't understand the conversation that the dispatcher was having back with me, because they weren't talking to me. They were talking, pressing the button with their foot, right, and talking to the person on the microphone who was on the phone, I guess. And dispatching stuff for fire and going back and forth. And it was, for me, it was like overwhelming. So
yeah.
Kudos for being able to do all that.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on that I can't even name everything. I mean, a full structure of fire, you know, there's different things that need to be done. We have to make sure that we have action plans in place, because if the battalion chief asks for more resources, we need to make sure we know which resources mm-hmm. they ask for right away, because we have to get on the county mutual aid channel and say, okay, this is what we need, let's go get them sent over.
That's the other thing, you guys have to know all the police lingo, right, and all the codes and all that stuff. The fire is a little different, they do things a little differently.
Correct.
And the way they handle the radio is different, and all their apparatus, you need to know what it is, what it does, all those kind of things too.
Mm-hmm.
Right, plus you need to know medical skills, I guess, to be able to do phone CPR or phone first aid as it comes through. You know, it's a little bit crazy to think about the amount of stuff that you're doing. And then when, at the same time, you could be handling all these things and somebody calls in about a noise complaint, right? And it's tough because that's not a priority call, right?
Correct.
So all of the other things that are going on are going to happen on top of or in front of that call.
And I think this is a point where I would like to ask a question, because we hear this every so often. We get emails or inquiries about, you know, I tried to call dispatch. They were very short with me on the phone. And why is that? So I think that obviously there's, say you're in a stressful situation, sure, we can all handle it better. That we definitely can improve on. But the other part of it too is that the questions that we ask when someone calls 911 or even the non-emergency number and they need assistance with something, there's a method to the madness, right? There's a reason why
Definitely.
You guys ask us those questions. So if you could share with us the reasons behind and sort of take us through the call process. So here I am, I'm calling, we'll say 911, and
sure.
I have an emergency, and say I think there's someone in my house. Take us through that
sure.
scenario.
When you call 911, we always ask the same questions. You call 911, phone rings, we say, Mountain View 911, what's the address of your emergency? We always want to know that first off. That way the phone gets disconnected, I know right away you're at 1000 Villa. That way, boom, I can send the officers there.
And hopefully nobody's calling 911 from the police department, right?
Correct.
Okay.
But
just saying.
Just never know.
And why? And so here, I think the assumption is you already know where I am. So why do you ask for the address?
We ask for the address because if you're calling from a landline, a phone that's plugged into the wall, the address does populate on the screen. However, that address, when you sign up for a phone service, it has to get inputted from a human being. There's always human error.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure the address that we're seeing on the screen is correct. And you could be calling because the next door neighbors, there's
right.
a problem there. So we want to know what is the address of the emergency. So you could be calling from 1000 Villa, but it's actually the emergency is next door.
That's
so
a great point.
That's why we're going to ask what the address is. And the second part to that is cell phones. A lot of people, I'd say probably 90% of the calls we get are from a wireless phone number. And the location that we get on our screen is actually the tower location, not the location that the caller is calling from. So we always have to confirm what the location of the emergency is. So that's the first question we ask.
Okay, great. So location is really important. And so, it's something to
great.
Teach our children, too, or talk to our neighbors and family and friends about, that make sure you know your address or try. And if you don't know your address, what's the next, like, sort of best case scenario?
Give us a location where you're at. If you're McDonald's, and unfortunately there's several McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
so we'll try to pinpoint, you know, which McDonald's
mm-hmm.
you're at.
Like
know.
McDonald's by the Costco.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've had, I have an example of that you guys did very well. It was a call of a man that I think was having a stroke or something and called 911. He was in his car and he didn't know where he was. I don't know if you were working at that time, but one of the dispatchers ended up asking him, just look at a driveway and give me the license plate of the car
exactly.
in the driveway. Right. And he was able to get the license plate kind of and... they were able to figure out, you know, that car belongs to this house. We were able to send officers there, and that's where the
car...
And
the dispatcher asked that question.
Yeah.
See, and
yep.
that is... That takes a... I mean,
that's some thinking.
That's, yeah, that really is. And that's something you guys have to do, and you're running through a variety of scenarios, right? I mean, when, you know, for police officers, when you go out to a call, you go out to that one call. You aren't getting a phone call. You're not having to dispatch, you know, three other things. You're just focused on that one incident.
Mm-hmm.
Dispatchers, that is not the case. I mean, like you mentioned, you have four or five different things hitting you. And sure, yes, you have help and you pick up each other's, you know, help each other out. But man, it's intense.
And so, sometimes we're only down to two people in the room. So in the scenario Sergeant Jaeger just gave, I mean, so there's one person taking the call. That person's also dispatched starting the fire department. They're going to start the police department as well, probably to try to help out. I mean, that was great thinking by the dispatcher.
Mm-hmm.
Had that person not been able to give that information, we could have, you know, asked them to turn their hazards on, start honking their horn, maybe get somebody's attention. We start thinking of all these things. I mean, worst case scenario, we can start trying to GPS the phone. That takes a process, though. You got to call the phone company. We got to fax them over a form.
Right.
So,
and this is someone's life that's...
Yeah, and
exactly.
a lot of times that person that you're talking to on the phone is panicking.
Exactly.
They're not thinking straight, right? And so, mm-hmm. okay, so to go back to what Sheena was saying, you
so
know,
location.
We're giving you the
location.
Location.
That's the first thing we ask. You know, Mountain View 911, what's the address of the emergency? You know, they say the address. 1000 Villa. Mm-hmm. What's the phone number you're calling from? You know, 650-903-6395.
So if you get disconnected, you can call back.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the third question, okay, tell me exactly what happened. And at that point, they'll tell us what happened. So at that point, we'll know, is this a police call? Is this going to be a medical or a fire call? That way we know kind of which mode
we're
to go
route
to.
It. Right, exactly.
So if it's going to be a medical call, you know, let's say they'll, you know, my friend's having a heart attack. At that point, what we do is we go into our medical dispatching. We go ahead and we start the fire department, and we let them know we're going to put them on hold while we start the fire department. We get them started, and then we go back into our medical dispatching. And then we have cards down in our dispatch center that we just follow along.
Instructions, more or less,
basically.
Right?
So we walk them through it, ask them questions. That way we can update the fire department as
well
as the paramedics.
Are they conscious? Are they alert? That sort of thing?
Yeah, we'll ask them things. How are you with the person? Because that's the first thing we want to know is if they're with them. That way we can continue to ask the questions. How old they are, male or female. Are they awake? Are they breathing? And then depending on what the circumstances are, there's 32 cards, I believe. And then we just flip to the card. So if they said they were having chest pain, we'd go to the chest pain card, and there's questions on there that we ask. That gives us a certain, what we call a determinant, so we can let the fire department know.
So there's a reason why you're asking these questions.
Exactly. It tells the fire department what type of equipment to bring. It tells the paramedics, the ambulance, what equipment to bring. It also lets us know there's certain codes. That way we know what final instructions to give as well. So based on that, we give our final instructions. Depending on what's going on, we may stay on the line with the caller, so or we may disconnect, and we may tell them if they have any further problems to call us back.
Now that's interesting. That actually brings up a good point, because we have heard, going back to what Shino said about there's a reason why you're asking these questions, right? People, we often hear, and even as a supervisor, I've heard people call in and say, you know, how come I'm calling for help? Why are they asking me all these million questions, right? And aside from the fire medical side of the world, there's also questions you need to ask on the police side too, right?
Correct. So if it was a police call, let's say someone called up and said, someone's breaking into my house. Mm-hmm. So right away, if it's an in-progress emergency, we can start them right away. We're going to enter the call in. The police dispatcher, who's not on the phone, is going to go ahead and dispatch the call. We can always, you know, we're in a very small room. We're all basically working side by side. We can easily shout across the room, hey, start them. We need them
going
now. Start
units to this location.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're in a separate room. So, but while the officers are going, we want to ask certain questions that way, because the officers are going to ask us, hey, what are we going to? They want to know certain things to know what equipment to bring as well. If there's somebody in there armed with a gun, they're going to want to know, because they're going to want to be armed with a gun as well.
Or
for their own safety. Or, hey, is this person still inside? Mm-hmm. So, because they want to know what type of situation they're going into.
That's right. And that's where the officer safety part comes into play. I think the other side of this, which I think is really interesting, is do you have... It's about the individual that we're trying to find, but also with the person who's calling. So have we had any interactions at that home before? For example, is it flagged that there are weapons there?
Exactly.
That's also important for the officers to know, because say, you know, you do have someone who's broken into your home, and say they managed to find that firearm you have, and, you know, they're in your house still, and they're armed with it, right?
Yeah.
These are all really important things for officers who are going to that call to know.
Mm-hmm.
Officer safety, right? And a lot of the questions I think you guys ask, correct me if I'm wrong here, is really about information gathering. The more information that we are armed with going into a situation, the better equipped we'll be to respond to it.
Yes.
And people sometimes don't understand that or make that connection of why are you asking about guns at my house?
Because they're afraid. Right. They're in a stressful situation.
Yeah, and it may... almost come off like we're asking too many questions. Like, why aren't you just sending a police officer? Little do they know, there's already officers coming.
Correct.
We're just trying to stay on the phone and gather more intelligence about whatever situation's going on.
I think that's exactly right. I think they're just thinking, well, you're just asking me a bunch of questions and not sending anybody, which is not...
They're already coming.
They're already coming, and they're probably coming in full force, probably five people, depending on what's going on. So,
and sometimes you call other agencies to assist.
Exactly. You know, and sometimes we're able to let them know, hey, I already have them on the way. I just need to ask some more questions. Sometimes we're just kind of in robot mode asking these questions because the officer's asking us, I need to know what's inside. I need to know what's going on. And so we have one ear open. One ear is, you know, connected to the headset, and our other ear is open listening to the radio, and the officers are just basically kind of spouting off these questions.
So I want to stop you right there because I think you said something really interesting, and that is you kind of go into robot mode, right? Your training kicks in, and you start just kind of building the scene or the situation in your head and coming up with a variety of scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you operate. But the other end, the untrained side, often sees it as a disconnect, and that, you know, you don't care, you're not taking them seriously. The perception reality part, I think, is really interesting. But what you're doing is you're all business at that point, right?
Correct.
How do you, because, you know, I mean, I see you guys all the time. You guys are just some of the most personable people ever. And your job, I mean, it's one of the hardest. I mean, hands down, one of the hardest. And I think that even more so than being an officer in some ways, because you can't, and you chuckle, but it's true, because when
chuckle.
you're
I wasn't chuckling.
When
I wrote
you,
something funny.
Oh, okay, good. Because when I did a very brief stint in dispatch, and as an officer, we were supposed to do this, a rotation, you feel so helpless. You know, you're on the phone, and you're hearing all this stuff happen. You know, these are people that you hang out with on a regular basis, and you're dealing with these very emotional callers who, this is not something they deal with, right? Situation, whether, you know, medical, whatever the case is scary. How do you, as an individual, juggle that? I mean, it gets stressful. I spend 10 minutes down there, and the phone start ringing, and I'm like, okay, I gotta go now. Too much.
For dispatchers, it's really hard. I think right now, for our line of work, it's something that they're slowly making progress with. We're not seen as public safety, unfortunately, whereas officers and firefighters are. We're just kind of seen almost as secretaries.
Which is probably
the opposite of
everything.
Be.
I mean, you are really, truly the hub. And without dispatchers, we would not be able to survive. And very much like it takes a certain type of person to become a police officer, it takes a certain type of person to be able to be dispatcher and to do it well. And successfully.
I think one of the hardest things for me would be to not, because you are connected to a team. Like we had a team. You came into our briefings. You were part of the whole thing. Our officers would come in, right? So there's this connection. And then when a critical incident is occurring and you're listening, and the worst ones is when an officer needs help, right, for whatever reason, you're stressing, but you can't leave that seat. Like another officer can go and help. You're kind of stuck there, right? So you can kind of help in your own way through whatever means are possible at that point, but there's still that emotional draw that happens because you're like
the adrenaline that surges.
Yeah,
right,
you're helpless.
Body.
You're part of the team and you're gear.
Yeah, and that's what they're starting to realize is with dispatchers is we have that up and down, but the problem is like with officers. So you have this call and your adrenaline's up, but you're able to deal with it and you're able to let it out.
There's closure.
And there's that closure with, with dispatchers. You're up. Okay, now you got to take this next call. Now you're up again.
Right.
Okay, now we got to take this next call.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas, I mean, we're very lucky here at Mountain View. We're a bigger department. We're not so big, say, as like San Jose or Oakland, things like that. Where, you know, if we wanted a closure, I could, you know, call the officer and what happened on that call?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could kind of get that closure. But we're always building up. You know, and then we always have to take the next call. And that's what I think our line of work is starting to realize is we don't really.
It never stops.
It never stops. It just keeps building and building and building, and we don't have that up and then that down, which is not healthy as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So,
and it keeps building and building over a 12-hour shift.
We work. Most of us work 12-hour shifts. Some of us are, you know, can work tens as well.
Right.
It kind of depends.
That's pretty intense. 12-hour shift. And you're down there, and we'll take a photo of it, you know, in the back cave, which is really, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Can you be in this one?
No, I don't want to be in this one. Let me ask you a question,
because
I you're going to be in this one.
Yeah.
Do you remember, or can you share with us, one of your more difficult calls that you've had to handle as a dispatcher in your career?
I've had several.
Yeah, did you see them all just flash through?
I know.
Yeah.
Wow, that was kind of amazing.
Wow,
I've had a couple. I mean, there's been, let's see,
I mean, something that was, you know, when you, so when I think of dispatchers, and I just pulled this up to find it again, you know, the 1997 North Hollywood shootout with the bank robbers and the dispatchers who were such an important, played such an important role for LAPD to help calm and, you know, the officers. And it was pretty amazing. Something to, you know, from that all the way to the kid who recently called 911 because people were in his house and, you know, they were going to shoot his parents, that sort of thing. I mean, to delivering babies. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So what about you? What calls have you taken, or a call you've taken, that kind of had the emotional up and down?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's been quite a few. I remember a call I had. It wasn't here. I was working the regular police channel, and I wasn't even supposed to be answering the phones, and my partner had gotten up, and so I had to get the phone real quick. And
of course.
It's always how it works.
When they go to the restroom, as we learned from Officer Kearns.
I'm not allowed to go to the restroom anymore. But I answered the 911 call, and it was a woman screaming, and I was trying to get the address. Luckily, she was calling from a landline phone, but we were still, you know, still supposed to confirm the address. Couldn't even understand the address. So just started officers that way to an unknown problem, and then I slowly was able to get out that basically someone had been shot. So trying to get more information. Long story short, it turns out her husband had accidentally shot himself while cleaning his gun.
Oh.
So she was panicked, obviously, and it was right around school letting out. Kids were about ready to come home. So, it was really hard. Mostly because I couldn't get the information from her because she was just so upset. What was really hard about it was the next day when I came in, started my shift, first call of the day, 911 call, answered it. It was a woman screaming, and I swear it was the same exact scream.
Wow.
And it turned out it was just a medical call. It was a mom who had found her, I think it was her daughter, was having seizures or was unconscious. So luckily, turned that call over to a medical dispatcher because the agency I was working for didn't take medical calls, and it was fine. But it kind of rocked me because I swore it was the same exact scream, and I'm like, oh my goodness, really? And I was working as a solo dispatcher, so I couldn't leave. I didn't have that chance. I'm not able to just get up and leave. I just got to take the next call when it comes in. So
and that's interesting because I think that people don't realize with dispatchers, you are chained.
Yeah, we're
to your area.
Tied to our desk.
Yes. I mean, it isn't like you can just pick up and, you know, go walk around the building or come upstairs and hang out. And, you know, even when you, I mean,
how are you up here now?
Yeah. Well, see that cord? See that cord?
Oh, yeah. The phones are coming into you. I didn't tell
you. Are they?
Great. I mean, even when you go to the restroom, I see you guys dragging your cord in there. I mean, it's true. I mean, and that's difficult. I mean, to be chained.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Bigger agencies are a little luckier because you are able to. Here in Mountain View, if we have enough people, if something like that happened, as a supervisor, if we see that, we can let somebody know, hey, if you need a minute, go ahead, take a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, when we go down to minimum staffing, if there's only two,
that's it.
You don't have that luxury. So, if something were really bad, and someone did need to leave, of course, you know, you call your supervisor, you call the manager, and of course they come in. So, but yeah,
Well, I know on the critical incidents too, it's really important that you guys be part of the debrief process with anything that happens. And
definitely,
we've talked about that before. I know our team, again, to go back at with the team that we had,
it was awesome.
You know, yeah, for incidents that we had, you know, we would bring you guys up and talk about what we did bad, what we did good. You know, all the way from tactics and things that are the law enforcement world to better things we could have done communication-wise and those kind of things. It's really important to be part of that debrief because it's that whole team.
It's the team
effort, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And I think that unfortunately, a lot of folks don't realize that it does take a team, right? And you know, they see officers on the street, but they don't see the records person. You know, they don't see the dispatcher. They don't see the evidence technician. Each of these roles plays a very, very critical part in preserving life and property in the city or any city or county that you live in.
Yeah.
And I think that hopefully through some of our podcasts, Sergeant Jaeger, we are able to share this with people.
Yeah.
Right? So I have another question for you, Carla, and that is, when you go home at the end of a very long shift and you've had this sort of up and down, or up and then down sort of day, how does it affect you at home? And are you a patient person? Because I know you've got kids. We've got kids. You know, I mean, sometimes at the end of the day, I'm not even answering phone calls, but I'm annoyed. I'm just annoyed in general, you know? So I go home and, Mom, this and that, you know. How do you manage the stress?
Usually when I leave, and I'm usually off duty by either 2 a.m. or 4 a.m., so I'm pretty tired by then. So I've been lucky. I just kind of go home and just relax for a few, and then I'm out. Mm-hmm. And I'm up early because I have kids, of course. If it's anything that's really bad, I'm lucky my husband's an officer, so mm-hmm. I could always talk to him about it. We don't really talk much about work unless it's something pretty major. But for the most part, I'm pretty laid back.
And it helps
and it really does. If it's anything that really rocks me, I just talk about it. But if it's anything, like, it's, say, somebody yelled at me, you know, I pretty much, when I hang up, yeah, it'll probably irk me a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it's gone and forgotten about, because I can't get upset about it. Because mm-hmm.
I'm getting upset every couple minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Then I'll be upset for 12 hours, and, you know.
So if you were gonna give one piece of advice to somebody calling in, what would that be?
One piece of advice.
You could say one thing to help people understand the process and that kind of thing. What do you think it would be?
I have a piece of advice.
You got a piece of advice?
I do.
For me or what?
No, I have a piece of advice for people calling me.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
I'll add it after she.
She may steal it.
Yeah. Oh, what if it's the same thing?
Okay, well then I'll make it feel even better. Yeah, I'll be like, yes.
I guess just after listening on this, to try to understand what we're doing down there, just kind of have some patience and realize that just remember that we are multitasking. We are listening to you, and we're hearing what you're saying, but at the same time, we're doing 20 other things. Mm-hmm. So definitely don't feel like we're just kind of blowing you off. I mean, we're definitely listening. We're trained to do 20 different things and have 20 different conversations. But just realize that's what is happening. So even if you do call that non-emergency line,
which is 6395-903-6395, which is a non-emergency line.
So we may put you on hold, and it's probably because we're taking a 911 call. We may be giving CPR instructions.
Right.
Could be working a structure fire.
You could be working a shooting.
Could be working any number of things. And you may be put on hold for a while, so please don't hang up and call back, because you're just going to be put on hold again. So just be patient.
And know that we're coming, right? You guys.
Exactly.
Know
that
we're
an emergency.
You.
Definitely.
Yeah.
If it's a life-threatening emergency, we're going to send them, and they're going to come.
And I've been put on hold.
How
before.
Does me too? Every time I call,
yeah,
for
exactly.
some reason, I
put
them on hold.
We put the officers on hold. They hate it too.
Officers, sergeants, captains. I mean, but you know what? It's the nature of the beast.
We put the chief on hold if we have to.
How does somebody come to be able to do a sit-along if they're interested?
They can contact our communications operations supervisor, Allison Taylor. Yeah. She's the one who approves it, and they just have to fill out, it's the same form as the ride-alongs. They'd have to...
So a background.
They'd have to be backgrounded to make sure they're not a felon and mm-hmm. no warrants. So, and then they'd come, I believe it's 2 hours, that they could come sit along.
And that's pretty exhausting. After 2 hours, you'll want to have to nap.
And just remember, they're there for another 10. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So,
okay, good.
Definitely, we welcome it and come down to our dungeon
mm-hmm.
anytime.
So I have one final question, I guess, too, is as you look back on your career in the past 13 years, and you are now a supervisor, and you are overseeing dispatchers and helping them become, you know, leaders within the organization as well, what advice would you give to your 10-year, 12-year ago, just starting out, self?
That's kind of a loaded question.
I know.
I like it.
Oh. But, I mean, you've been through three agencies now. You've had a lot of experience. You're a supervisor. You know, you train, you see a lot of things. You've been through all of it yourself. You know, if you were to look back, and someone who's interested in going into law enforcement to become a dispatcher, or someone who is a dispatcher, what piece of advice would you give them? You know, run every day on a treadmill, keep dark chocolate in your pocket. I mean, I don't know.
Take a deep breath and relax. Mm-hmm. Sun goes up, sun goes down.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah.
Or anything that you want to come up with.
Yeah. We're trying to think of, like, how to...
Well, similar to the fact that the community needs to understand that we are in this to help and we're coming, mm-hmm. that a newer dispatcher or a newer police officer may not understand the breadth of the bigger picture of what's going on all the time, right? And admin may have ideas that come down to the worker bees in the department, and we're all sitting here like, what are you thinking?
Exactly.
Right? Is that kind of where
I
you're
guess,
going?
Yeah. So I guess for me who is just starting off, and if they definitely, if this is their career and they have however many years you have to put in now before you can retire since it's now changed, just try to see the whole, the big picture. It's hard when you're just, you know, just the line level staff, or it's even hard when you're just a supervisor, but I think that's what helped me, is try to see the other side of things. Try to think of things from, like, the admin perspective, or
give people the benefit of the doubt, too. I mean, don't expect, I think, the worst, or assume the worst.
Yeah, I mean, don't even know if the benefit of the doubt, but, okay, so, well, this, let's say, for example, this new policy came out. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, well, I hate it, I don't like it, well, try to kind of step back and, well, I wonder why they wrote it. You know, is there a reason? Mm-hmm. And just take a step back.
Which is probably one of the hardest things to do.
Exactly.
Is to be introspective and to sort of give pause and think about, like you said, the larger picture, but also, what can I do better? How have I contributed to this? Mm-hmm. Or am I? And how
exactly.
do not get, how do you stay away from just kind of getting into the weeds too much and staying above it a little bit and realizing that, you know, you're a team and you need to be responsible for each other's well-being and mental and physical health, right?
Yeah, and definitely don't sweat the small stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to come to work with a positive attitude. I feel very fortunate to be here and to have this job, and definitely there's people out there who are way worse off than I am, and just try to be upbeat and,
yeah.
I'm happy to be here. So,
well, we're lucky to have you here.
Yeah,
Carla,
you.
Ninth Step Public Safety Dispatcher 3 Supervisor. Thank
you
very
title.
Much. Yeah.
I know.
Thank you.
I don't know if they can fit it on a business card.
They can try. It's definitely a two-liner.
Well, thank you very much. It was great having
you
here
guys.
Today.
Any unit available? I got a 1066 that just ran across from the apartment complex towards the train track and might be hiding.
10 Barber, 1019.